time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, Thrivers, this is Lee Bockham, and you're on the Thriveology Podcast, the podcast about making an impact in the world and in your life. I am a thriveologist, which means that, and I always say I'm a full-time thriveologist, but really a part-time thriver. Thriveologist is somebody who simply studies how you thrive. So for the last quarter of a century, I've read and studied on how people thrive in their lives, whether it's because of external events, you know, just things that kind of they got lucky, and I really don't believe much in that, or whether it's because of something they've created in themselves. And what I've discovered is that it's often a combination of the two. It's often about finding a way of making the best of what comes your way while building something from within. So I call that making a life of impact, whether you're impacting your own life or the life of others. So some people commented on last week's podcast. Last week's podcast, if you recall, was about how you deal with regret. And one of the things I proposed that regret is making retroactive decision making. That's Tim Ferriss's phrase, that you're retroactively trying to make decisions about things that have already happened, things that usually can't even be changed. And it began to have me think, and the reason I put that in on this life of impact is because regret keeps us locked so badly in our own personal life. But more than that, regret often keeps us from moving out into the world to make an impact. It freezes us both as individuals and in how we present to the world. And so some people had asked, how does this tie into that life of impact? Well, that's how it ties into the life of impact. And I began to think about the other things that keep us trapped. And one of the big ones is resentment. Now, resentment is one of those pieces that I think is partly misunderstood. What resentment is, in my mind, is it's really unprocessed anger, which is really about hurt. So it's unprocessed hurt. And what happens when we become resentful is that we poison relationships. We poison those relationships. You know, maybe somebody did something to slight us, or at least we perceived that they did something to slight us, that something that hurt our feelings. And we got angry about it. And that anger being unprocessed became resentment, got below the surface. It became an infection of anger and hurt and became that resentment. And so that poisons the relationship, because no longer when we're resenting something or somebody, no longer can we see that situation or that person in actual terms. We create ways of understanding about how bad they are, how mean they are, how evil they are, and we begin to pile up evidence. We look for proof of what we already believe. And so we begin to create a structure about how people are doing things badly to us and how life just isn't fair, and we become more resentful over time. So it poisons those relationships, and it also freezes the person. It freezes you, it freezes me when we're caught in resentment, because it stays within us and it locks us from taking action, from doing anything else. Now, the interesting thing about resentment is that we all carry some level of it. And usually we carry some level of it from something that happened to us at a place where we may have a different understanding now, and yet we never release that. You know, we create these pockets of resentment and never go back and revisit them to see how maybe we misunderstood things, to see maybe that we believe differently now than we did back then. I was with a client a few years back, and this client had a very troubled relationship with his father. It never felt like he got the blessing from the father, never felt like he got what he needed from that relationship. The father was distant and cold and hardworking, and the son was very differently tempered, where the father was very hardworking and driven and really had a very cynical view of the world. The son was a very outgoing person who really loved relationships and really was a much more creative person, but also didn't have quite the same level of maybe work ethic that the father did. And so the son felt like he never got the blessing of the father. It went on for years, and he built up all these resentments. And when I was seeing him, he came to me because his father had become sick. And when his father became sick, he suddenly realized how much anger and hatred he had for this man, and how that was really confusing at a point where he also wanted to reconnect with his father. And so we worked through some of that resentment. And one of the things that happened as we worked through it is he realized that he was locked in on a childhood view of his father that had changed over time. He no longer saw him that way. In fact, in his waning years, his father had begun to let the son know that part of what was going on when he was a child was he feared for what this son might not accomplish. There were a few facts that the son didn't know about. The father had come through with Depression-era lifestyle, where everything felt so threatening, so dangerous, and the only way through was felt to be hard work, and that the only people who were going to survive were the hard workers. And so as the father saw this son who was not so much about physical labor, but about a creative pursuit, it began to alarm the father. And the father was fearful that the child would stumble, would not make do as an adult. And that translated into the father pushing and pushing on a child who was built differently than he was, that had different understandings of the world than he did. But the son didn't know that. So one of our discussions, I said, what do you know about your father's growing up years? And he went back and he spent some time with his father. And his father, being a bit more frail and facing the end of his life, shared how difficult his life had been as a child, shared how he had to work so hard to help support the family, and how he lived with parents who were in absolute fear of finances, fear of loss, and were desperate to never be at the losing end of that. That was the work ethic that had created his father. And as his father told him these stories, the son suddenly had a very different perspective on the father. You see, when we have resentments, we've often cast someone into a role that may be partly true, but is often not entirely true. And the part that's not entirely true is usually the part that gives us empathy and understanding. In reality, resentment is the antithesis of responsibility. It keeps us away from responsibility, keeps us stuck with being a victim. Now, let me unpack that just a little bit. What happens when we're resentful is that we are aiming the blame at somebody else. Now, responsibility is not about re-aiming the blame at ourselves. It's not about blame at all. Responsibility is saying, what do I do now? All these things have happened. What do I do now? Resentment keeps us locked into what happened to us and the hurt it caused and the pain we want to avoid. Now, I'm all for avoiding pain. The problem is the story we tell about resentment is that somebody else did us wrong. Resentment is that country song, somebody done me wrong. Somebody's hurt me and I am not going to let them do it again. But really what it's about is somebody's done me wrong and I'm going to keep reliving that pain. And when I do that, it keeps me locked away from saying, what do I do? What do I do at this point? Responsibility. I always love to kind of explain that responsibility is the ability to respond. It's our capacity to change how we respond to things in our lives, given new understandings, given new actions, given new possibilities. And the way we stay away from that is when we play in those areas of resentment and regret and victimhood. And that's why I bring these up on these last 2 weeks of resentment, or of regret last week and resentment this week, is because as we begin to get away from that, we get freed up. We don't have to play the victim role anymore. And by the way, we all play that victim role in some way. We all have this game in our head where we're the hero and the world is against us. Some small ways, some big ways, and it varies how much from person to person. Some people have such large stories about how they've been done unfairly that they can't get beyond it. Others just have smaller stories that keep them in pockets of stuckness. But the ability to respond, responsibility, is not about blame of anyone. It's certainly not about blame of yourself, and it doesn't have to be about blaming the other person. What ends up happening when we're stuck being a victim is it keeps us believing that someone else should get what they deserve and that we aren't getting what we deserve, that somehow there's an imbalance and an unfairness, and it fosters this sense or a perspective of unfairness in the world. It doesn't give us a broader view of saying, what do we do? It keeps us stuck with what's happened to us. And one of the curious things for me is that the resentment piece really is all about the hurt that happened to us, intentional or not, that we then exhibit as anger, first of all. And sometimes we don't even let that anger out, right? Sometimes that anger can't be expressed. My client I was just telling you about could not express his anger towards his father. It would not have been accepted, allowed, or appreciated in any way. He would have been in more trouble. And so instead of that anger, that hurt having a place to go, it buried deep and began to be resentment. So let's think of this process as something like an injury. Something happens to you. You bump your leg and you get a cut. Okay, that's the injury. Immediately, your body's response is, you know, it turns red around that area and there's some swelling. It becomes angry. There's an outward appearance of that internal injury, of that injury that happened. And so now we see kind of the stacking of our emotions that we get hurt, but outwardly that shows as anger. Okay, let's say that hurt, that anger is not dealt with. We don't clean out the wound. We don't address it. We just keep on going and an infection develops. And that infection begins to spread, and it spreads throughout our body, even the parts that have not been injured. That's the same thing as resentment. Resentment is the infection that comes from the anger that's really caused by the hurt. Anger is always an expression of hurt. Always. It's a secondary emotion to the primary emotion of hurt. Resentment is secondary to anger. If we process it appropriately, if something happens to us and we address our anger in some way, whether we decide to let it go, whether we express it to the other person, if we have a way of moving through the anger, the resentment doesn't get stuck. But the resentment is when the anger gets stuck within us and it keeps us playing that victimhood role, that place in our mind where we say, this was caused by the other person. My life was fine until that person came along. You can play out that story in many ways that we all played out through our great Hollywood script writing ability that we all have in our minds. And we find ways of taking away more and more responsibility from ourselves and placing more and more blame on the other person. This is not to say you are at fault at what happened to you. This is a completely separate piece from that. That's when we drift back to blame. And one of the things I've noticed is it's very difficult for us to distinguish that. We so quickly get into blame. Who's at fault? Was it me? Was it somebody else? And so when I often say, you know, don't be at a reference of blaming the other person, what's heard is, oh, then I have to blame myself. There is a neutral place. There's another arena to look at, and that's responsibility. Responsibility, the ability to respond, is about how can I move from here? What do I need to do now? What are the lessons I need to learn? How do I need to go beyond that? So let's talk about some things you can do to move away from this frame of resentment, no matter what has happened to you in the past, no matter what your story tells you. Let's do some rewriting of the story. The first thing to do is to shift back to hurt, to understand what the hurt was about, not just to say I was hurt, but what was the hurt about? In the case of my client, the hurt was about feeling unloved by his father. Now notice, I said feeling unloved by his father. In reality, what he learned in the end was his father deeply loved him and was deeply concerned for his welfare, but did not know how to express it. His father had his own injuries from his childhood. His father was restricted in how he could express his feelings, and the best he could do was to say, I've got to prepare my child for the future. I've got to prepare my son to live in the world. That was not about a lack of love, but what was felt by my client was that lack of love. So he had to go back to that place of recognizing that the hurt that was there was caused by feeling rejection. It was caused by feeling that the father didn't love him, rather than seeing that the father loved him but didn't express it in a way he could feel it. Okay, the next is, so once we've shifted back to hurt, we shift to responsibility. And responsibility is, what do you need to do now? Not, why didn't you do something then? See, I'm not saying you should look back and say, you know, why did I let that hurt me back then? That's not the question. The question is, what do I need to do now? How do I move forward with? How do I get away from the whole blame piece? However, let me add here that it may include taking responsibility for what continued or continues to happen. For example, I was talking with a person who kept telling me how his girlfriend kept hurting him over and over and over. And finally, I had to ask, why do you keep stepping into that relationship where you can be hurt over again? At what point do you take responsibility and say, I am not going to be in a relationship with this person who will continue to hurt me? How many times does it take to learn that lesson? So he kept making himself the victim of this story. And the bad person was the girlfriend. And yet, what he missed was the fact that he kept re-exposing himself to the threat. Or how about somebody who's absolutely miserable in their job? And so every day they come home and complain about the bad things that happen and how they are victims of their boss, their coworkers, the workforce, the whatever it is, the government, however they want to place it, without seeing that they're taking no action to get out of it. I spoke with a person and she was absolutely miserable in her job. She'd been miserable for a number of years. And I said, what are you going to do about it? She said, well, you know, I'm planning on changing jobs. I said, great. What are you doing about that? And she said, what do you mean? I said, you know, have you put together your resume? Have you started contacting people and letting them know you're looking? She said, no, I plan to find another job. I just haven't had the time. This job just keeps me so trapped. At which point I reminded her that the job was no longer keeping her trapped. She was trapping herself within the job. And so she could be resentful of lots of other pieces and yet miss the fact that she's responsible for not taking action. So when I say responsibility, not blame, I'm pointing to saying, what do I do from here? And it may be, how do I shift what's going on presently? It may be saying, how do I deal with that past by getting back into that hurt place and saying, what do I need to resolve it? How do I get beyond that? Now, those resentments are always based in memories we drag into the present. That there's no other way to express resentment than re-remembering those events. And so part of the task is to say, how can I breathe through those memories of hurt? They're going to come. Whatever is causing that resentment, when it flashes through your mind, you may be more or less aware of what it is that's flashing through your mind. You may just recognize that you're resentful of this person. And then as you begin to think, you'll notice that there are scenes playing out in your mind about what happened. Scenes playing out in your mind about the hurt caused. And at that point, we can either work through those emotions. We can either let them pass, or we can keep them trapped inside. Several weeks back now, about a month ago, I had an encounter with an authority person in our life. And, you know, one of the things that I recognized was that there was an injustice to it. The person was basically acting like a bully in his place of authority, and it wasn't over me, but in his place of authority, it was affecting my life. And so I confronted him about that, and it ended up being a very contentious relationship that didn't go anywhere, didn't resolve anything for me to confront him. So several days later, I was walking my dog, and I realized that thought of that encounter was rolling around in my head, and what was happening was adrenaline was flowing in my body. I could find myself clenching up. My fists were turning into fists. My hands were turning into fists, and my stomach was clenched, and my head was beginning to really feel that pressure of wanting to do something because I was resenting what had happened. It was unprocessed at that point. And so I could either continue playing out that scenario in my head, or I could decide to breathe and release it. And so I do what I always try to do. when I find myself at that place where there is adrenaline flowing, I know that I've tapped into a memory and I need to breathe through it. And so I belly breathe. Now, I've explained this before, but just if you haven't heard before, let me talk about what belly breathing is. There's no magic to it. Belly breathing is the way you're designed to breathe. Notice that you're designed to breathe this way, which is an indication that we are actually designed to let go of resentment, not get stuck in them. But belly breathing is when you tell your mind to relax, that there really is no threat. And resentment, when we begin to think about those resentful things, we feel a threat. We automatically go into threat mode in our body. So if you want to find out how to belly breathe, lie down flat. If you don't know how to do it, this is the easy way. Lie down flat, whether it's on the couch or on the floor or on your bed, and put a hand over your belly button and a hand over your breastbone. And then breathe in and notice which one is moving. If the hand over your breastbone is moving, you are not belly breathing, you're chest breathing, and all you're doing is accelerating the feelings, locking in that feeling of resentment, of threat, of danger. If, however, you shift to your hand that's on your belly button and you get that, so that's the only hand that's moving in the breathing process, you've now shifted to belly breathing. Now, here's why this works. Our brain is designed to look for those threats in our world. Now, if we weren't able to think in words, then we really would just be looking for the present threats. You know, I'm pretty sure that my dog, when he's walking with me, is only aware of the present stimuli coming at him. It's not thinking about last week of what happened, or 2 years ago of what happened, or when he was a puppy of what happened. He's only going on what's happening right then. But we humans have this little thing called our mind and language. And those two pieces mean that we can recall and replay those memories over and over again and not release them. Not ever let them go. We keep them as our story. So our brain that's wired that primitively is then kind of abused by our mind that keeps pulling up those things and putting our brain on alert and acting as if that moment's still going on right then. I'm walking down the sidewalk in our safe neighborhood thinking about that bad conversation. It's not happening. It was a week later, or several days later at that point, a week later, whatever, but it had already happened. It was in the past tense. And what was I doing? I was continuing that conversation in my mind, which puts my brain on high alert. Now, because our brain is primitive, it doesn't understand words like calm down. What it does understand is when we signal it, when we find a way of signaling that primitive part of our brain that everything's okay. Okay, so now let's look at our bodily build makeup. Right, we have these soft organs in our mid body that need to be protected. Our rib cage protects those upper organs as well as they can be, but the lower ones can only be protected in a fight by tightening up your stomach muscles. So when we tighten up our stomach muscles, we're no longer breathing through our belly; we're breathing through our chest. That tells our brain that it's time to release adrenaline and get ready for a fight. But we can go the other way and relax our stomach muscles and breathe through our stomach and send a signal to our brain that everything's okay. There's no threat. And that overrides it. And so when we breathe through the memories, we're allowing our brain to process them and release them as they happen. So when you find yourself at that point where it's gripped and you can't stop that from happening, it's just the way our brain works, how our mind works. But when it happens, the next step you want to do is quickly start breathing through your belly. Calm yourself down. Tell your brain that everything is okay. And when you do that, those memories begin to pass much more easily the way they're supposed to. Okay, the next thing you do is you accept that anger is a normal emotion. It's secondary to hurt, but it's normal. The problem is you have to learn how to express the hurt and the anger appropriately, and most of us go from one of two models. We're either explosive with our anger, at which point we then feel bad about it, or we hide from our anger, at which point we seethe about it. Either way, we end up on the backside not feeling good about it. There is another way of being able to express what's going on with us. In fact, what I would encourage people to do is instead of leading with anger, to lead with hurt. instead of lashing out and saying, oh yeah, well, you, and fill in the blank, you say, wow, you know, that hurt my feelings. That was a painful thing you said. Can we talk about that? That changes the structure of that conversation. And so what we end up doing is saying, you know what? Anger can be a signal of hurt. Anger can tell me, it can be my reading that I've just been hurt in some way. And when we begin to look for what that hurt is about. Okay, so once we accept that anger is a normal emotion and we decide that instead of getting sucked into it, we can express our hurt and we can express it in very strong ways, in very forceful ways, then we can accept that anger and let it go. Just like when we address the wound, then usually it doesn't get infected. You can stay away from the infection of resentment by immediately expressing that hurt, or even going back and saying, you know what, I realized that what you said the other day, it really hurt my feelings, and I've thought about why that is, and I just needed to share that. Sometimes you don't even need to share it. Sometimes you just need to get in touch with the fact that it hurt and decide you're not going to be captured by that. Okay, what do you do after that? Then you examine your boundaries and your standards. Your boundaries are what you will not let someone do to you. This is about being responsible. You know, if somebody keeps hurting you, for instance, my friend whose girlfriend kept hurting him, he kept allowing his boundaries to be violated by her. He kept allowing her back in to do more damage. But when he finally said, you know what, I'm not going to accept that. I'm not going to allow that to myself to be treated that way, and began to create boundaries, the first thing that happened is it didn't take long for that relationship to end. And so he began to raise his boundaries and set a responsibility for the fact that he was not going to be treated in a certain way. And then there's standards. Standards is what you expect of yourself, what you're going to live up to. And what this guy realized was that his standard of who he would allow around him, his standard of what he was looking for, his standard of who this other person would be, was way too low, because the standard of himself was too low. His standard of what he thought he should be in the world was too low. And so he began to look for how he needed to be more in the world, how he needed to show up more in the world, how he needed to find people who were supportive and on his side. So he raised his standard and his boundaries, what he expected of himself and what he would not allow others to do to him. And as we do that, we begin to regulate how much we can be hurt. Because as we create our boundaries, we're more immediately able to stop the hurt in progress. More than that, we can look back and go, you know what? When I was hurt back then, I wasn't being able to monitor my boundaries. Now, sometimes you can't. As a child, you didn't know to monitor your boundaries. So sometimes when things happen as a child, we just look back and go, wow, I wish I had had better boundaries back then. I wish I had known to have boundaries back then, but I didn't. But now I do. And now I can keep that from ever happening again. And then the next step is to gain a perspective on what happened. To look back and say, how did this happen to me? What was going on? What was going on, not just with me, but with the other person? And when we do that, our perspective, you know, what I talk about taking a helicopter view, our perspective is to pull away from ourselves, to not just look at it from who done me wrong, but what's happening to all people, what happened to me, what happened to that person, and to see the other person with empathy. My client learned empathy about where his father had come from and the woundedness that his father had and how he was not capable of being the father he wanted. And what he did with that was to make sure that he was the father to his child that he would have wanted, that he was able to express his love and his devotion and his acceptance of his child in ways that were not given to him. Which is about seeing yourself with empathy, about recognizing that you probably also at times don't do all you could do or be all you could be or respond to others in ways you could. And so you begin to see that from a place of empathy, that that's not about being a bad person. It's about being a person. And then to wrap it all up, we opt for forgiveness. I truly believe that we are created to be forgiving people, and we get on our own way. That our natural way of doing things is to let, when things happen, to let them go, respond appropriately, whatever that might be, and then to let it go and move on. And we get in our own way by the way we misuse our thought process. So choosing to opt for forgiveness means that we recognize that forgiveness is not about doing the other person a favor and letting them off the hook. It's letting us not have to carry it forward. And resentment is always a representation of a place we have not forgiven. We've not let go of. So we opt for forgiveness. Now, if you haven't already listened to my podcast on forgiveness, this is a good time to do it, because resentment is a place that points to a place where you haven't found that forgiveness and you want a framework. In that framework, in that podcast, I give a framework, a step-by-step process on how you can forgive. And so these are so tightly tied. If you have not already heard the podcast on forgiveness, please go and find that on the blog. In fact, there'll be a link for you to find that forgiveness podcast, and you can take advantage of learning a framework that's going to help you walk through that. Because when you deal with resentment as something else that can be forgiven, something else that needs to be forgiven, you have once again stepped into responsibility. You have once again avoided being a victim. You have once again decided how you will move into the world and how you will be impactful in the world, because you're not caught by what's happened to you. Okay, I hope that was helpful for you, and I hope that you found some places of recognizing why those pockets of resentment might still be there. Now, let me ask a favor from you. One of the things that I'm constantly trying to do is spread the word that there are ways of thriving. If this made sense to you, if you found something here that was helpful in helping you thrive, I would love it if you could spread the word. And there are a couple of ways you could do that very easily. One is, if you're listening in iTunes, you can just go to iTunes and do a search for Thriveology and simply leave a review. Just let me know how I'm doing and let others know how they can find this. That's a great way of spreading the word. The other is to show us a little Twitter love. If you're on Twitter, it's real easy to send out a tweet to your followers and let them know that you appreciated this. You can just show us a little Twitter love by going to thriveology.com/love. That's Thriveology, thriveology.com, thriveology.com/love. It'll pre-populate a tweet. You can change the wording if you want, but if you don't, you just hit send and it automatically gives a link to this podcast so people can find it. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you walking through this process with me as we learn together on how to thrive better and how to live a more impactful life in this world. I wish you the best.
Been listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at thriveology.com or at thriveologymagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled thriveology. It's your life, time to live it.